You're listening to the Tech Marketer Podcast, the podcast for marketers who strive to be continuously improving, who understand that our world is constantly changing and it's up to us to keep growing and learning. Because what works today probably won't work tomorrow. Welcome to episode 15 of the Tech Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Williams, and today I'm joined by a special guest, Sian Simpson, who is the Global Community Manager of Kiwi Landing Pad. Now, that's a group over in San Francisco which helps to take New Zealand technology to the world. In the past 2 years, Sian and Kiwi Landing Pad has worked with over 1,000 New Zealand businesses, met with over 1,500 entrepreneurs, and grown the New Zealand tech community in the United States to over 3,000 members. So I'm super excited to hear from Sian and learn a little bit about what she's been doing in the US and New Zealand. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
No worries. So let's start by having a little talk about what Kiwi Landing Pad does and how it helps New Zealand companies.
Yeah, so Kiwi Landing Pad was set up by Sam Morgan and John Holt as a soft landing point in the US market for Kiwi technology companies wanting to land. Essentially, building a business is hard, but building a global business is even harder. So how can we make that journey easier for people when they come over?
Great. And when people from New Zealand want to expand into the US, what sort of steps do they generally take? Is it just go in there and start up, or should they be taking smaller steps than that?
I think that's a really interesting question. So generally we get an introduction to a company looking to come over, or our information is really accessible online. So they reach out, they're like, hey, we're doing a trip. We want to come over for these reasons. How can you help? And we usually offer them office space or, you know, a place to base themselves. We have a meeting, it's case by case basis. And then we go from there. What do you need? What information, access and networks do you really need to get yourself going?
That was a really a great point about not only offering somewhere you can go and set up, but with a community as big as yours, how you can connect people to networks and existing connections in the US and in San Francisco. Yesterday, I attended a great event that Kiwi Landing Pad runs in New Zealand every 6 months, which is the New Zealand Sales and Marketing Jam. It's a panel event where speakers from the US come and share some of their success stories and advice. One of the things that was spoken about by the panel was the right way and the wrong way to ask for a connection. Those had some really, really practical tips. What would be your advice on someone wanting to be connected when they first arrive in San Fran?
So I'm really passionate about this, and I teach people a lot about the right way to do this. So basic steps are, we are big fans of double opt-in intros, so we will always ask someone that you want to be introduced to if they're interested before we go ahead. We generally don't just make straight introductions as a courtesy. And then I guess that comes down to being considerate of people's time and your own social capital as a connector. And then we ask people to give us like a three lines, why are you interesting, what are you doing, and what help do you need? The more specific you are, the easier you are to help. And specific means, please identify people yourself that you want to be connected to, or like 10 companies with a specific role, and then we can go through and find the node for you and then go ahead and connect you that way.
So I guess the moral of that is try and make it easy for people to help you. You know, like it's really hard for someone to help you if you have a vague request of just, can you connect me with some people that might want to give me capital? And it's a lot easier if you put forward a really clear explanation. And secondary to that, what I thought was interesting is this idea of why should they want to talk to you? So is this going to be mutually beneficial, or are they going to be interested by the conversation? And I think New Zealanders can have this reservation about asking for help. And so if we phrase it in a way of, hey, I'd like to connect to you and talk about this because I really appreciate your advice, maybe I could share this, then it feels like it's a little bit more of a two-way street. Is that something that you think helps the chance of getting connected to the right people?
I think it's best described as you really have to be defined by your mission, and if you have a specific mission, it's really easy to get on board the train. It's just, can you fly your own flag, find your voice, and really own your message? A lot of people have unclear messages, and then obviously you're hard to help. What's interesting about the US is that people really want to help you. It's a joy. San Francisco has a culture of openness and collaboration. So how do you make it easy for them to help you? And you're not a burden. You're totally helpable, and Americans love Kiwis. It's just make yourself helpable.
Yeah, make it easy for people to give you their helping hand. So I touched on it just before that you ran these really great events in New Zealand where you bring very high-level people from the States in both sales and marketing. Yesterday on the panel there were guests from Under Armour and people that had worked at Google. It was a very impressive panel. How do these sorts of events help with entrepreneurs wanting to break into the States and to grow the community for Kiwi Landing Pad?
I think that's also another great question. So how the Sales and Marketing Jam started was we meet with thousands of entrepreneurs a year, and what we were noticing after running for 6 years was that there was a core competency gap in New Zealand with sales, marketing and product management. And we were like, well, instead of doing this one-on-one or unscalable, how do we actually make this scalable so that people, when they land, are actually ready? How do we build the capability in New Zealand before they actually go to the US? So we started the Sales and Marketing Jam essentially to not only build on people's knowledge, but also bring the knowledge back from Silicon Valley. So it's really expensive to go to San Francisco. And so can we give you a full-day crash course before you get there so you can keep building these skills? I think it's really important to note that when you have an event, they're usually really high impact, but the impact dies straight after the event. And we really didn't want that to be a case with our events. So now the reason why we do it every 6 months is because where you are, when you hit our events in one phase, you might be focusing on content marketing. The next 6 months, you might be focusing on your sales process or sales strategy. So can you come and learn about the thing you need to know right now to grow your business for the next six months? And then come again. And then what we do with all of the jam topics is we take all the topics we talk about and don't talk about, and then we do a monthly webinar series where we get an expert to come spend an hour of their time. We give the companies who are really busy an hour to come and tune into information that's very specific, and then we deep dive on that specific topic for an hour, which is proving to be really awesome, and then we write about it.
Yeah, so I think that's a really good thing for people to be aware of and marketers to learn from, is about how do you build a strategy around events, with events maybe being the high point, but it's not the only activity. There's other things that are layered in there, like the blog posts that you share and things as well. The other side of it is, and you were talking about deep diving, is the sort of advice that you're giving is really practical, quite easy to apply. It's not too high level, and sometimes it's actually a good reality check of what doing business in San Francisco is really going to be like, and sometimes we need that. From a content marketing point of view, how important is it for you to make sure that advice always stays, you know, on point, practical?
I think advice is a really tricky thing, and we try and make observations as opposed to advice. So mm-hmm. What are the thousands of companies that we see a year doing, or what are all of our experts in the US doing that we can sort of take their learnings and then give that back to New Zealand and close some of that knowledge gap?
Cool. And part of what allows the Sales and Marketing Jam to take place is sponsorship and partnership with companies like Air New Zealand and BNZ. How does those sorts of strategic relationships help Kiwi Landing Pad, and what advice would you give other companies in forming strategic partnerships like that?
This is another really easy, interesting and easy question to answer. So most people have a collective mission to do something. So Air New Zealand, BNZ, NZTE, Kiwi Landing Pad, we're all on the same mission to supercharge New Zealand, as Air New Zealand would say. And so that's what that means, is how do you actually help people? And so in the case of forming strategic partnerships, you really have to figure out what people want, right? So I guess in the case of someone like Air New Zealand, a lot of people are like, we just want free flights. And we're like, well, that's a bit self-serving, right? That's just selfish. And most people won't help you if you're just being selfish, right? So it's like, well, what are you actually interested in doing? And so some of these businesses have a mandate to take New Zealand technology to the world like us, or to bring the knowledge back to New Zealand. So it's like, how do you actually work in with someone's mission? So then you're perfectly aligned to come together to work on the mission together. And I think that's actually what a lot of people miss with sponsorship, is they're like, well, we want these things. And it's like an isolated event. And then the person having to give the sponsorship is like, but we want the bigger picture. We want to be part of something more. And I think that's where we've been quite successful with some of our relationships. You know, BNZ has a massive pipeline of SMEs and technology companies that they need to help. Kiwi Landing Pad helps technology companies. So there's a natural bridge in the middle of how do you increase New Zealand export. And so that's why we have a really great partnership there.
As opposed to, hey, BNZ, can you sponsor this one-off event series or things like that? And that sort of comes back, earlier you were talking about letting people help you and how important it is to communicate what your mission is so that they understand why you're asking for that help. It seems like that's a similar theme here, where you're saying, If you didn't have a clear mission as Kiwi Landing Pad, it would be quite hard to get these other companies to help you. But because you do, that clarifies that, and you can come around that focus and that mission together. This is something that was talked about by the panel as well, and I've heard it at past Kiwi Landing Pad events as well, this importance of figuring out your pitch and being really clear on how you communicate. And it's something that we seem to struggle with over and over as Kiwis, and particularly when we go out into the big wide world and we talk to Americans and we say, this is why you should invest in us. What is your advice for tech companies and startups on refining that message and getting that mission right?
So I'm not an expert, but I would say actually practice and spend some time like writing about it. So I've recently written a blog post that I'm yet to publish, but I've been talking about it in my opening presentation for the Sales and Marketing Jams this week, where I've come across this notion where there's a correlation between doing speeches at school and then pitching for investment. And if you're uncomfortable with it at school and you apply the same ethos to it there that you did there to your investment pitches, you're going to have a similar result, right? So practice really makes perfect. The second thing is, as Kiwis, we really don't like to talk about ourselves. And I really encourage the point of there is a difference between confidence and arrogance. And can you tie yourself to five things that help you speak about yourself and what makes you different, what makes you unique, what makes you quirky? And then it's just easier to get people across the line. If you don't talk about yourself, how are people meant to invest in you and how are they meant to help you? I think the third part of that was kind of unrelated to this particular question, but Kiwis can be very awkward with money sometimes, and I think it's because we actually just don't talk about it again. So I think having more of these conversations about money as well will increase your chances of getting investment or being comfortable even having those conversations.
Definitely. And I think was touched on a little bit yesterday, but one thing that really stuck with me was this idea that even though Kiwis have this sort of tall poppy syndrome and we don't like to talk about ourselves or boast or come across as arrogant, there are ways that you can be confident without coming across as arrogant. And a really good technique is to explain things through the eyes of your customers. So say we are really good at delivering complex projects. For example, BNZ loved working with us because we delivered this website, those sorts of examples. And I think Kiwis tend to be a little bit more comfortable with that, and it also comes across as a lot more authentic as well.
I have a really interesting story about this. When I started at the Kiwi Landing Pad, I said, no one knows who I am, but we need to spread the message of what we do and the great work that we do helping Kiwi businesses. So how can I do that? And who is the most known entrepreneur in New Zealand right now who's had an experience with us? I happened to be born from Bend. Mm-hmm. And so I said to him, I was like, can we do a case study and can we get you on video talking about your experience coming over to the US, but also talking about how the Kiwi Landing Pad has actually helped you? So I did a series of these interviews and case studies and then started publishing them. And then everyone was like, oh, Kiwi Landing Pad. The really good New Zealand entrepreneurs are using them because they are, you know, XYZ. And I think that's just like, it's a credibility and comfortability thing of, oh, these are the people using this service, it must be good, or it must be helpful in some way.
So. Yeah, we always want to see what other people are doing and how they're succeeding, and hearing it from their point of view is a lot more powerful than hearing it from a sales point of view or a marketing point of view, definitely. We've talked kind of generally about some of the things that Kiwi Landing Pad can do to help New Zealand companies entering into the US. From all the experience you've had with companies doing this, what's the sort of advice you'd say, or the things that trip up New Zealand companies really often when they make their first move into the market?
I think the assessment of the market itself, so do you actually need to be going to the US? You have to consider what your motivations are. I think Silicon Valley for a long time has been the golden child. It's like, do you actually need to go to Silicon Valley, or should you really be going where your customers are? I think markets like Toronto and Australia are really overlooked. One of the problems I actually want to solve next year is, why is Australia so hard to break into for New Zealand companies? And it's, I think, a very solvable problem. It just requires a bit of research and a deep dive into, you know, the intricacies of their culture. One of the inklings that I have is that we treat it like New Zealand, whereas I imagine it's much more like the US in terms of, you shouldn't really go to the US, you should pick a state and start there.
And there's been some huge New Zealand companies from Spark and The Warehouse that have fallen on their face in Australia. And I think the glamour of the United States pulls us that way there. But you're right, there is a huge market. And a market which will give a lot more mess than New Zealand sitting right across the ditch. And there's a lot of really great advantages to that, like time zones, the ability to pop over and have those direct relationships. Everything that Kiwi Landing Pad's doing as well, part of these events is these regular contact points and this ability to meet people in real life. And I think we can't undervalue that as marketers, how important it is to build relationships in person with people. You can have a great product and a great message, but people want to work with people, right?
I think so. I think it's a good time to sort of segue into community here, because that's definitely a community question. So it's interesting the difference between building an offline community and online community and the personal drivers for both. So I personally find that Kiwis really like to engage in person and they really don't like to engage online. So for me as a community manager with a now virtual presence, it's like, how do you add value and get people to engage? As you know, like 10% of your community will be very active and then the other 90% will watch. I actually did an experiment on the Sales and Marketing Jam community, which is possibly a bit naughty, but I was fascinated. I was like, how many times can I email you before you will start unsubscribing?
Yeah.
No one unsubscribed. Because they were like, this will be useful at some point, so I'm just going to put up with your emails.
Yeah.
And that was a very interesting experiment. I was like, so you won't engage with me, but you also won't unsubscribe, so I know that you're getting my emails. It was quite a cool experiment, actually.
So I guess there you've proven that there's value there, even if they're not maybe sharing or doing the next step to that. So that's really cool. How many times did you email them to prove this experiment?
I think like 8 times or something.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty high. I feel like you've actually proven that. And I get your emails and I don't think I noticed that they were coming through more regularly than normal or anything like that. So
what's interesting about the Sales and Marketing Jam is I feel like I'm spamming people.
Yeah.
But then people are like, oh, we didn't know about it. And I'm like, how can you not know about it? It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's Facebook, Twitter, like everyone in the community knows about it. People are talking about it. It's in the media. Like, what rock do we hide under where we don't get this news? Or is it just too much stuff going on in terms of like event fatigue? Or, you know, there's so much stuff going on in New Zealand, which is so exciting. But it's like, how do you choose what to go to and what community you want to be part of?
Yeah, I think that's just a reflection on real life and just how much noise there is. We are very spoiled, particularly in Wellington, for the amount of events and really cool things happening in the tech space. But yeah, we have it too. Like, we're running an event in Australia next week, and I feel like we've blogged about it, it's been on social, we've been emailing people, but we still get people who are like, you didn't personally tell me this in a one-to-one conversation, so I don't know about it. And so I think as marketers, you can always get a bit wary about, we don't want to tell people too many times. But I think on the other end of the spectrum, people would rather they were told about it 3 times than miss out on it and not be able to go to that event that they would FOMO over.
I feel like that's the difference between New Zealand and the US, is when I moved to the US, I didn't use Facebook as like a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, yeah, crowdsourcing, get all the information you need. So if I'm going to a new place, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to Denver. I want to meet blah. And then I'll just get this download of, you should meet all of these people and you should go to this place and this place and this place. And I'm like, wow, you've just built my itinerary. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And I think too, leaving a bit of space so that people can introduce you to other people, that you can have a meeting which might lead on to another meeting, because one of those important things when you've, you know, met someone really interesting, connected, is to be like, okay, so who would you think that I should meet next? And making sure, especially if you're going all the way to the States from New Zealand, that you've got that space in there. And also, again, being explicit about who you want to meet and why and things like that.
One of my favorite things to tell people about San Francisco is, don't do a 3-day trip. You need at least 2 weeks. So
yeah.
San Francisco is actually very different, right? So as Kiwis, we have a very good safety net and social net. So you kind of have to get over the, not controversy, but it's kind of confronting going there first off the bat with some of the welfare that goes on. So you have to get over that.
Yeah.
It's not the cleanest city in the world either, which Kiwis also don't tend to enjoy. And then it's just the sheer intensity of information and people, and like, people don't talk about the Kardashians in San Francisco. It's like technology all the time. So I tell people, you have to make room for learning by osmosis, because you just get a download on everything. And it's like, you catch an Uber, you catch a Lyft, you ride share, you're in a bar and someone will just start talking to you, or you go to events and you just get so much information. It's a little bit overwhelming at first. And then the phenomenon of cascading introductions, that one person will introduce you to 3 and then 10 and then so on. So make room for the unknown, of what will happen. When I moved to San Francisco, we were speaking about buzzwords before and the ones that are annoying us at the moment. So there was this one word that people kept using. I was like, this is weird. It's like a movie, right? So the one word in San Francisco that everyone uses is serendipity, which I think is a little bit lame, but it's actually so true of how the entire city works. And then I guess my favorite one at the moment is accidental collaborations.
Wellington is one of those cities which we are really open to connecting. People are really helpful. They do collaborate a lot. Do you think there's San Francisco is Wellington on a much bigger scale, or are there really big differences in the cultures?
I don't know if there's differences. There probably are, but I mean, there's probably equal amounts similar and different. I think Wellington is definitely a smaller version of San Francisco. It's easy to get around. It's super compact and close. There's a thriving community. I would say that Wellington is probably way, way, way more creative than San Francisco is. San Francisco, you have quite a monoculture of technology going on. There is an undercurrent that I really try to encourage Kiwis to get into, but you do have to spend more time to really learn where that undercurrent of social activity sort of lies.
And one of those things, so when you're saying don't go across for 3 days, that people forget too, is your big investment from New Zealand is getting your flights over there, and then the bit that you spend to spend a little bit longer there is just accommodation, maybe some extra meals, a little bit of time out of the office. It's not going to make or break your budget, but it does give you that ability to be like, hey, I know blah blah blah, and maybe they're available in a week but not tomorrow, which is really cool. So when you plan a trip, we sort of touched on it again at the event yesterday, would you recommend that they would come across and tie it to something bigger, like maybe an event? We talked a little bit about SASTA and conferences that happen in San Francisco.
I think when you're coming across, you should really try to do as much as possible. So your entire goal of going is to get the lay of the land and to meet people and to learn, right? It's to put yourself out of your comfort zone and get everything you can't get in New Zealand, which is why we go offshore in the first place, right? So one of the easiest places to do this is at a conference, but my caution there would be pick a conference highly relevant to you, and then also do some sort of sense checking or back channeling of, is this an A-list conference? Are the speakers amazing? Is it just going to be a whole bunch of sales people or marketers that probably you don't want to talk to? Is it going to be really valuable in terms of potential customers, investors, learning? So is the content going to be good? And also I think there's a scale to conferences that you really need to consider. We have a lot of people go to Dreamforce and they need to go to Dreamforce. But if you don't need to be there, you probably don't want to be, because you would be spending your entire time trying to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
I went to South by Southwest this year and I spent the entire time trying to figure out where I should be.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, I just sat in the Choose Atlanta house and they had music and talks and companies, and I got into the back room. I got to meet like the entire Atlanta scene, and I was like, oh, this was actually more useful than like doing the entire conference, because it was just too big.
Yeah, and I think that's what you kind of forget from New Zealand. I've attended like big Amazon conferences in Las Vegas too, and you spend about a day going, oh my gosh, this is bigger than anything I've ever seen. And if you don't go in with a clear idea of what your strategy is and who you want to meet, it's really easy to suddenly just be lost in the momentum and come out of it the other end going, okay, that was really cool, but what did we achieve out of it? You explained a really great story to the audience yesterday about, and I think it was Shuttle Rock and how they'd approached a conference. Can you share that one?
Yeah, so I hope they don't mind me sharing this story. So a great example of a Kiwi company who went to the US, we had a talk, they identified 70 customers they potentially wanted to talk with who they knew were going to be at the conference. They asked me, do you know anyone here? And they highlighted the 10 most important ones for Japan and for the US. So I went through my network on LinkedIn and I was like, who can I get you in front of? And I asked them very specific questions like, what roles do you need to go into? Do you want to get the lay of the land? Where does this sit in terms of the organization structure? US businesses are really big, so who is the right person to talk to? And I also had a spiel, so they were like, this is what we're doing, this here is our pitch deck. And so I actually managed to find them two connections that were really valuable, and they met with them that week.
Great. And I think that's an important part too, because we, in tech companies, we can tend to write off things like LinkedIn really quickly. We are in a similar situation with Silverstripe breaking into a new market, trying to find out who knows who. And LinkedIn is a surprisingly effective tool. I use it to connect to marketers across New Zealand and Australia. And again, if you can connect to someone and say, hey, look, or get that introduction ideally and say, this is who I am, this is why I want to talk to you, and this is what I'm hoping to achieve, that makes it, again, easy for people to help you as well.
I think New Zealanders have a really weird relationship with how the speakers at the Sales and Marketing Jam, their relationship with social media, because we just use it so differently. So like my Facebook example before, but this sounds a little bit snobby, but most people in San Francisco won't take a meeting with you if you don't have a LinkedIn profile that is active, because it effectively acts as your resume. And I don't have a CV. I have my LinkedIn profile, which is like a public stamp of approval saying, this is my authentic self. I put it out there online. That's where you view me, and this is the stuff that I do. And I guess by virtue of it being out there, it's true. And then also, I guess, Twitter. So I explained an example yesterday where I knew of an Australian founder that I thought was really cool, and she was doing really cool stuff. And I saw that she looked at my LinkedIn profile, so I looked at hers, and then I went to Twitter and she was following me, and I took that as an invitation to invite her out for lunch.
Yeah, of course. And I think you're absolutely right. In New Zealand, we have a different relationship to social media, and it's something that we probably have to catch up with. I'm exactly the same. I use my LinkedIn all the time. That's what I consider my CV. And if you asked the question yesterday at the event, how many people sort of got their job through a personal connection or a reference and things, and New Zealand is small enough to do that. And the second you step outside of New Zealand, people are looking for more evidence of what you've done, what you've achieved, recommendations from other people as well. All those sorts of things, LinkedIn, writing blogs, all that sort of stuff is kind of evidence of what you've done and what your expertise is.
I think also when you're meeting with people in the US, they will just Google you and they will look you up on Facebook. They really want to know what you're about, and that's because they want to have the best conversation with you as possible. And so the more quirky information that they can find on you, the more relatable you are, and therefore the easier the conversation will be. And you also become more likable if people can actually see what you're about.
And that's a good warning sign, I think, too. Like, if they're doing all that research on you, you better have done that research on them. Like, you don't want to turn up to a meeting where you're asking for them to help you and they know more about you than you do about them.
I think we need to do more research. So my background is actually in search engine optimization. So I actually got really good at researching, which is kind of creepy. But it's also good. It's like, how prepared can you be? You can never over-prepare, and I would encourage you to just spend that half an hour researching people, figuring out what they're about and businesses. And, you know, interviews in the US, you go through like a 12-step process, or you have like 10 in-person meetings where you meet the entire team. It's pretty intense, and I don't think Kiwis sort of understand the rigor that goes on in the US.
Yeah, definitely. And we, I think, also have this little bit of a culture, and you sort of touched on it about it being creepy, about online stalking and sort of personal boundaries and things, whereas in the US it's sort of the opposite. Like, that's expected. You should be doing your research. You should also be putting out information about yourself and what you've been up to.
I think there's a fine line. I think, like, you don't really need to publish your relationship or family details online, but if you're interested in surfing, like, is there any problem or harm in someone knowing that you're interested in that, or wine, or, you know, any of these small tangible things that just make you appear more human?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was, was it Nick or was it Dan that was talking yesterday about doing these small personal touches that leave really lasting impressions, because in a very digital world where everything's scalable and automated, the way to actually stand out is to care about someone, put a personal interest in, and then maybe reach out to them in a way that they're not expecting. So you notice that they're really into gymnastics, send them an article or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. I actually send a lot of my sort of high net worth individuals like blogs that I write or read all the time. I'm like, hey, I've been thinking about this intellectual topic, what are your thoughts? And they're like, wow, you spoil me, that's amazing. I also think just the more personal you can be, you know, we can be too myopically focused on business sometimes, and to give some more personable elements is really valuable. It shows someone that you care beyond a transactional relationship.
And then you feel more comfortable asking for help, because maybe the 10 times before that you've emailed, you've just simply reached out and given them something that you think they're going to be interested in, so it's not continually taking in a relationship.
I think a good rule of thumb is just always be giving, and then when you do need to take, even though it's pretty uncomfortable for Kiwis to take, I think, just give, and then you will receive at the same time.
Cool. So just a final question. What did you hope that people would walk away from the New Zealand Sales and Marketing Jam knowing?
I think there's multiple levels to this. I think a little bit more of a global knowledge is definitely a good thing. How to approach the US from an outset of, hey, I'm coming, what should my first trip be about? We did a companies panel so that the audience could actually ask companies who have been there and done that, some of the intricacies that they learned, because it really is all about like experience, right? It's like the stuff you don't know that you don't know that then you need to actually figure out. I think general sales, marketing, and product management knowledge, we're really trying to encourage companies to be more capable, be more credible, and also just keep building on that knowledge and growing your business. When you want to build out the technology ecosystem, you have to increase the caliber of the people and the knowledge. And by virtue of New Zealand being so far away, you actually need to bring the knowledge back of what everyone is talking about, sort of in the innovation mecca in the world. So I hope they took that away. I guess the synthesizing that down to 2 points is a sense check of, oh, we're already doing this, that's great, or, oh shit, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah.
I should probably get onto that now.
And I think all the companies who went would have really enjoyed it. And the good news is if you didn't go, it's an event series that runs every 6 months. But of course, as Shan had mentioned, there's things that go on like webinars and blogs throughout the year. So there's lots of opportunities to learn from Kiwi Landing Pad and from the companies that they work with. If people want to find out more, what should they do next?
I think visit our website at kiwilandingpad.com, or if you're particularly interested in sales and marketing, go to the salesandmarketingjam.com website, or reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Twitter is probably my favorite medium right now. Email, I've got too many right now, but it's shan@klp.org.nz. Shan, spelled S-I-A-N.
Perfect. We'll make sure that all of those links are in the show notes for this episode. And I'll also be posting some of the learnings that I found from the event yesterday. I've managed to fill 6 pages of notes, so there was lots that came out of it. Of course, that's all over on techmarketer.org. Thank you so much for coming in, Shan.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
No worries. You've been listening to the Tech Marketer podcast. Make sure that you subscribe on iTunes to keep up with our latest interviews and news. Thanks for listening. I hope you've learned something new today.